Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Pure Nintendo Podcast. This is your weekly dose of all things Nintendo. My name is Gemma, and joining me this week, I have my two good friends. I have Kirk. Welcome back, Kirk.
Hello.
Hello. And I have Trev. Welcome back, Trev.
Yeah, glad to be back. I missed you guys.
Yeah, we missed you the last few weeks. Good to have you on the show again. Here?
Nice.
We just thought you were really quiet.
I didn't have much to say.
Yeah. Well, I hope you got a lot to say this week because we've got a long list of items to talk about. We're going to go through those recent financial updates. We've got some interesting DLC to talk about, lots of games that we're playing, and of course our Switch 2 rumors of the week. So let's get to it. And the first item, yeah, is that during the week Nintendo had their annual kind of financial, what did we call it, Kirk?
Earnings report.
Yeah. Maybe. Something like that. To their shareholders, and it was very interesting. And I saw lots of, you know, I don't really want to refer to Twitter, but I saw lots of tweets flying around about it. And it was an interesting report because essentially there was a drop in Switch hardware sales overall, and it's been dropping the last few years, but the overall profit for the company has increased thanks to software. So it was really promising. I think everything was like plus, you know, plus percentage in terms of dollars earned over the last year. And it shows that even though the hardware kind of sales are in decline in terms of the numbers year over year, the games are just still, you know, flying off the shelves kind of thing. So, and which is to your point, Trev, that you've written on our notes here, which is that physical games are still outpacing digital, which is super interesting.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that might just be a Nintendo thing because I think Sony and Microsoft are really pushing digital, but It's good to see that for Nintendo, even if it's a slim margin, that the majority of gamers are still supporting physical media. So that makes me happy because, you know, I'm a physical guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For you're games, really... not in terms of my physique, but.
It's good to know. Good to know. Yeah.
We'll get you a t-shirt that says that for the next next event we're at.
Yeah. Well, I thought it just meant that you exist, like you're a physical person. you're not just living in the Matrix somewhere, so. Yeah. Yeah, it is good news.
Are we not discreet matter?
Yeah. No, it is. It's cool because it's, you know, 2024 and everything is available online. And like you said, other consoles are promoting digital and, you know, everything is available digitally. But we still like to collect our physical games. And I think that shows, yeah, Nintendo fans are pretty, I don't know, serious gamers in terms of Nintendo gaming, right? We like to have the actual game in the case and the, you know, a shelf with a display of all of these things.
Yeah. I think it's the shelf, like you said, because I think a lot of Nintendo gamers have been playing for a really long time and have a whole history of games, like all the Zeldas and all the Marios, the Pikmin even, although I guess there are only a few, you know, moving along the shelf there, and you want to keep that going. I know I do. There are like three or four franchises I have to buy physical. Some of them I don't care, but my Fire Emblems, my Zeldas, my Metroids, I have, no, not Metroid, sorry. My apologies to the Metroid people. I sold my Metroids. But there are, what's the Trauma Center and Trauma Team. I have all my physical editions for those still.
What, all two of them? How many of those games are there?
Well, they're like four.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, I think there are four.
Huh. Yeah. Go figure.
Yeah. And what about Xenoblade?
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, except for Chronicles X. That one, before I knew I loved the series that much, I sold that one when I got the, what system? I guess it was when I got the Switch. And I regret that. And I'm waiting for them to release it again because I need a physical copy of that.
Cool.
I do still have the Prima guide for it, a hardbound guide that did me no good in that game, but I still have it.
Really?
Yeah, it gave you a bunch of useless information that didn't really help you figure out where things were.
Yeah, okay.
But, yeah, we'll save that for when they finally announce that that's being ported.
Yeah, which will happen eventually, of course, yeah. Yeah. So, and even with the Switch hardware, it was only a small drop for what we're now in the seventh year for the system. So, you know, it's really strong. And it just, it kind of reiterates all of the talk we've been having lately about the Switch successor. And Nintendo even kind of addressed that during the week. You know, they talked about, I suppose, the difficulties or the time it takes to come up with new hardware. And it really does seem like they're not rushing with it. And I'm thinking for the first time, maybe I agree with Trev that the Switch 2 won't come out this year.
Welcome aboard, Gemma.
Yeah, it's seeming more and more likely. I mean, it could still happen. But yeah, it just seems like they're just taking their time. And Nintendo does that, right? They do take their time. They work by their own kind of schedule, which is good in most ways. You know, they'll delay a game like Metroid Prime 4. Maybe that's too delayed. But even, you know, several Zelda titles have been delayed. You know, we just need a little bit longer to work on them. You know, please bear with us. They're also always so polite when they talk about it as well. I love that. but yeah, it does seem like I think they would want to get it right and not rush it. And especially if the Switch is still doing, you know, fairly well, which it is. Yeah, it's still doing so well. You know, they're not going to rush something out just for the sake of it. They're going to do it properly. They're going to do a good job.
And that's the thing, too. This late in the system's life, I mean, a lot of, you know, it came out early 2017. Here we are, early 2024. You know, how many systems are even, you know, still on the market after that length of time? A lot of systems are, you know, historically have been discontinued. You know, they have the 5-year shelf life.
Yeah,
so the fact that the Switch is still thriving really is kind of a break in the mold in some ways.
It is. Yeah, it really is. And to that point, I mean, it was right at the start of the week, so almost a week ago, I was seeing that the Switch was less than 1 million units from being the best-selling hardware in Japan, and it had just over 32 million units sold. And at the time, only the Game Boy Color and the DS were slightly higher. They were 32, you know, 32.5 or close to 33 million for the DS. Now, this is just in Japan. But by the end of the week, the Switch had surpassed that number, and now it has become the highest or the best-selling console in Japan with 33.34 as of late last week. So yeah, it's officially the best console, the best selling console in its home territory, which is pretty exciting. And we were talking a few weeks ago, I think, about it being the best selling console of all time, and it's currently third, isn't it? Is that right? Behind the DS and the PlayStation 2, I think?
Yeah. They're both in the 150 million range.
Yeah. So, I mean, not surprising, you know, Japan is where Nintendo's born and bred and where it does really well. So it is, you know, just testament to the Switch's popularity and staying power. And, you know, that's just really cool. It's a cool stat.
Especially coming off the Wii U. The Wii U sold a third of that amount worldwide.
Yeah, exactly. Just crazy, honestly. And they obviously don't want another Wii U situation, so can they back up the Switch with another success? Well, we don't know. Time will tell. But there were some interesting software sales data. You know, for example, Super Mario RPG was, I think they called it, someone was saying it was a surprise hit. I don't know if it's a surprise exactly, but it certainly did well, selling 3.14 million units, which is apparently more than the Super Nintendo version sold back in the day, which was 2.14 million units.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's cool. I was one of those.
Congrats on being it, by the way, Gemma.
Yeah, thank you. That's right. You weren't on that episode when I announced that. Yes, I was so excited. It was such a good game. So much fun. I loved it. So I'm glad to see it did well. It deserves it. Well, it was in our top. Was in our top three, wasn't it, for last year? I think.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. I think it was third behind Wonder and Tears of the Kingdom.
Yes, very well deserved. Very, very well deserved. We still need to convince Kirk to play it.
Yeah, there's not enough melodrama for Kirk.
That's right. Too many, not enough people have had their hearts broken and lost family members and arms and their eyes.
Yeah. There's plenty of humor, though, and quirkiness, if that's helps.
Well, that could be my game is we're heading into the twilight months of the Switch before the next console and nothing's coming out. Maybe I'll dig into that finally.
Yeah, I think it's worth it. It's really cool. And like I said, you know, ages ago, it has that really, because it's a Square Enix kind of developed title or working with Nintendo on that one, it has that, it does look a little Final Fantasy-ish, like classic 90s Final Fantasy. Just some of the, I don't know, some of the rendering in Bowser's Castle, when you're inside the castle, it just reminded me of a 90s RPG. It looked really good. I liked it. I loved it, in fact. So there you go. Any other sales info that you guys gleaned from the week that you wanted to mention? Thoughts on it?
Maybe not specific games, but it stuns me not only that the Switch has so many million sellers, because that used to be like the standard, right? You know, a game says a million.
Mm.
It's a smash hit. But the Switch has so many games that are like in the tens of millions. It's like the best selling game on Wii U wouldn't even be like a top 25 game on the Switch. It's just true. Insane between, like, you know, Animal Crossing, the new Zelda games, you know, Odyssey, some of the Pokemon games and, you know, other ones, even kind of oddity stuff like Ring Fit Adventure and just some of those. To see them 10 million plus, that's like, again, Switch is breaking the mold. Now a game sells, you know, a few million, say like Mario RPG, and it's like, okay, yeah, it's a few million. But yeah, man, it's just insane to see the attach rate. And that's why even if hardware sales are dropping, the revenue's up because these games have such an attach rate relative to the hardware.
Mm, that's a good point. Yes, because when you have whatever 100 something million consoles out there in the wild, that means, you know, people need games to play. So yeah.
Yeah. Like how many, like 50% of Switch owners, what, own Mario Kart 8? Something like that.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
That's nuts. Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, does Kirk own Mario Kart 8? You do, don't you?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say Kirk, maybe he doesn't, but no, you do. Yeah. Well
my kids, my kids own it. I play it loose every now and again.
Yeah, I've lost my copy of Mario Kart 8 actually. Well, just recently. I know, I'm devastated.
Physical games versus play devil's advocate here.
I know. We were on a road trip and the kids were playing it in the back. And when we got to our destination, I was, you know, looking at the Switch and checking it. And I'm like, where's Mario Kart? I'm hoping it's somewhere in the car and I just need to find it, but currently I am without Mario Kart 8, which is awful. So
you know, I do have a bit of optimism for you with that. My kids at one point lost the cartridge for Mario Kart DS.
Mm-hmm.
It was missing forever, and then I went to trade in my Kia Soul for another car, and the very last thing I did before I left the lot was dig between the back seats with my hand, just like run it across, and I found it. It was right there. Yeah. It had been missing for so long, and I was 30 seconds away from never seeing that car again.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to give it a really good once over and find it. Yeah. It's probably just there somewhere, but yeah. I hope it is. Yeah. Thankfully, there's no DLC.
I did have one game to mention.
Oh, yeah.
You might have mentioned it last week, I don't remember, but Wonder has snuck into the top 20 for best-selling Switch games. It's got about 12 million.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow, so quickly.
Yeah.
But again, and that illustrates my point too, 12 million, and it's barely in the top 20.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, it's crazy. And it's only been out, October, wasn't it? So,
you
know, four months, not even 4 months. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. That's really good. That's the staying power of the Switch, and also the power of, I guess, IP like Mario as well. So,
yeah, it's true. You look at the games ahead of it, the two Mario Party games, Mario 3D World, Mario Odyssey, New Super Mario U Deluxe. So, so many Mario games in the top 20.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, Mario Kart is the big one.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, that's really cool. And so we'll see. I guess they do their quarterly reports. Is it quarterly or 6 monthly? I don't know, but they'll do another report later in the year. And I mean, we're still expecting, you know, a direct this month. So we'll see what they say during that presentation. There'll be something for sure. Whether they announce the Switch 2 or not, who knows? But we'll see. But yeah, so that was a really good wrap-up of the financial stuff for the week. Big news from Nintendo and good news for them as well. There was an interesting little announcement about a week ago for Dave the Diver, which is a game that that I loved last year, and I reviewed it. I think it was in my top 10 as well for the year, and maybe yours as well, Trev, I think.
It was. It just made my top 10. But since then, we played a lot, especially my wife. Combined, we sunk dozens of hours into it. My wife totally beat it.
Oh, nice. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's really a huge, huge game. A lot bigger than I thought when I first played it. It's going to be even bigger with these expansions.
Exactly. And so the latest expansion is a Godzilla expansion, which, of course, I was very excited to see because I know Kirk is a huge Godzilla fan. And I don't know if this is going to tempt you to get the game or not.
I don't know. I don't think there's ever been a Godzilla video game I played where I really, really got into it. But maybe just adding him to another game is a really good idea then as a result. The Godzilla games that are dedicated to Godzilla, I've never really gotten into because it was always just two monsters fighting. It's all fight.
Yeah.
Not my kind of game. I'm not knocking it. I don't know what else you do with Godzilla other than have him fight monsters. But that's what I'm saying. Maybe adding him to another game where that's not the point of a game now is a much more interesting concept.
Yeah, I think so too. Maybe he'll help Dave catch some hard to catch fish. I don't know. You know,
even I will say, Kirk. Dave the Diver does have melodrama, so
okay,
yeah,
in its story, quite a bit actually.
If Dave is diving and he finds an oxygen destroyer, leave it alone. Trust me, don't mess with it.
Okay. Yes, and this is due out in May apparently, and it kind of coincides with the release of Dave the Diver for the PlayStation because it was a Steam game originally, and it came to the Switch exclusively late last year. For the first console release, which was awesome. Now it is heading to other consoles, but this expansion pack was kind of really mentioned at the same time, and it's presumed to come to other consoles such as the Switch. We sincerely hope so. But yeah, it certainly looks, you know, I don't know, interesting, I suppose, and to see this giant monster in this world of Dave the Diver. And he's kind of got the same, you know, pixelated style that Dave has, that the game has, which is a really cute and kind of retro style. So I'm really excited to see what that brings to the game and how that will fit in with the story. I mean, you'll know, Trev, from the game that Dave's always doing, sort of helping out people, you know, who are looking for relics in the ocean and things like that. There's sort of professors and things who want his help. He's always getting called on his phone. Hey, Dave, I need you to find this for me. So maybe it's another
risking
mission.
His life to get these trinkets. I think the worst I remember is the guy that had like the anime doll. And he's like, oh, it got, you know, the package got lost in the sea. And, you know, I'm there risking my life to get this. Looks like a Sailor Moon doll or whatever it was. And I'm like, come on, give me a break.
Yeah. And Dave feels like he can't say no. So
take advantage of my kindness.
Yeah, exactly. He's a bit of he gets walked all over a little bit, but that's part of the game, I suppose, and part of its charm. And the melodrama, but yes, I assume it'll be something like that. Dave will be called in to help and discover what's happening with Godzilla. Yeah, so check out the trailer if you're watching on YouTube. We'll try to pop it into this video if it is available. I think it is. The next thing I wanted to mention was Promenade, because this was a game that I'm reviewing at the moment. It's not out till the 23rd of February. Correction from last week. I think I got the date wrong. Sorry, but it is coming out on February the 23rd. But it has a demo out now, which I would encourage you to try. And Trev, you put this in. It's a big download. Is that correct?
1. I did. 5. I went to download it and it was asking me to archive and make room. And I couldn't be bothered. Wow. Because if anything over a gigabyte for a demo is a little big for me.
Yeah.
But the game does look cute. So I'll give it that.
Yeah. Because I've downloaded the full game, obviously, to review it. And I don't remember having to archive anything, but I may have recently archived something big to save some room.
Well, I wonder how big the demo is, because the game itself is 3 gigabytes. So the demo is half the size of the game. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I guess that makes it a pretty decent demo, I suppose.
Bigger than the Mario Donkey Kong demo anyway.
Yeah. Did you try that?
I did. It was a little, light for me, but
yeah. I mean, I did want to talk about demos later. We can talk about it now, though, since we're talking about demos. That might be a good segue. Just because I've been thinking about what makes a good demo, and you know, I've been playing Sea of Stars, which is what prompted me to think of what makes a good demo. And I would love your opinion, because the Sea of Stars demo for me, it didn't. So the reason I thought this is, I picked up Sea of Stars, which I said I was going to do last week, and I did, Kirk. So you'd be proud to know that I am playing it. And loving it. And just compared to the demo, I'm way more into it than I was the demo. And I think it's because of the story, because in the, you know, the real game, obviously you start at the beginning and you get to know the characters and it's really engaging. And I don't know if you found the same thing, but in the demo, you kind of jump in a bit later and it's just like, I just didn't have that same rapport with them initially. So I wonder if some demos for like story-based games like Sea of Stars are maybe harder to kind of sway an audience. I guess you're just trying to get a feel for the mechanics and the visuals at this point, as opposed to the story. Whereas a Mario versus Donkey Kong demo, even though it was super short, it is a puzzle game and you can definitely get a feel very quickly for how it works and what to expect from the game. Does that make sense? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think so. I'm thinking, especially with a game like Sea of Stars, I agree with you. I played the demo. In fact, you remember you asked me once I started playing it, if the demo was the beginning of the game, and I was so unimpressed with the demo that I couldn't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, the game is fantastic. I think especially though with Sea of Stars, there was so much story and so much just like walking around, and I guess there were like a couple light battles at the beginning, but it was mostly just exposition. People who aren't used to that much story might have been driven away from it. I wonder if that's the thought, is we're not giving them enough to do at the beginning of this, unlike a lot of the big RPGs and JRPGs now, where most of them just like thrust you right into a huge battle right away, and then we sort of backtrack. So there's a lot of action up front, and the story is slowly revealed as you move along, because you've got a 120, 140 hour game, and I don't think Sea of Stars is going to get that far. So that's my guess on why they did what they did, but I do agree that it wasn't the best demo. I like demos for that kind of game where I get to play like 5 hours, 10 hours at the start, and then it's like, okay, that's enough time, go buy it. That will sell me on a game more than what Sea of Stars did.
Yes, like the first kind of chapter or something or whatever. Sometimes it's and that's happened. I've seen RPGs do that before. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I feel bad saying that the demo didn't take me because I knew the game would be good, and I know it certainly looks lovely and plays very well, and the turn-based battles are very interesting. Like, they've added a few elements that I really like. But yeah, the demo was hard to kind of engross yourself into, just because you didn't really necessarily care about what was going on, because it was just a random scene from the game. So yeah. But then playing the real version, it's just like, I found it, like, it is a bit, there's a lot of exposition, but it's interactive. I like the way that you start with a battle and then you go back to 10 years earlier and then you see how they got to that battle, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
the two protagonists. So yeah, it's interesting. And I was thinking, what other demos have there been recently that I wanted to compare it with, apart from Mario versus Donkey Kong? There was another one. No, it wasn't Eastwood. That was a free trial. I can't remember. There was another one that was story-based that I thought had a similar issue. But Trev, do you have an opinion on what makes a good demo, or any demos that strike you as being better than others or worse than others?
Well, you know, I think back to when I was younger and, you know, certain gaming publications, because I've always been a fan of print media. Even before I started writing for a magazine, I subscribed to a lot of magazines growing up, and some of them would have demo disc, you know, included on the front, and would have small snippets of a bunch of games. And my thinking is, if you're already interested in a game like Sea of Stars, the demo is not going to sell you on it. they're more designed for people who maybe never heard of this game or had no interest in the genre, in which case you want to try to hook those new players. You know, if you go on in the Switch eShop, you can actually sort and search just demos. And there's, you know, dozens of demos you can check out, but I've only ever downloaded a handful. Because, you know, one, my time is valuable, and
yeah,
you know, I know I could tell if a game just doesn't look like my thing, but if it's a game that's sort of on the fence or on the bubble, then I'm inclined to take it. But and of course it depends on the genre too, but I tend to appreciate the meaty demos. Like Kirk was saying, you can play for a few hours, then transfer that content over to a physical release. Like the one that comes to mind is the Pokemon, the dungeon game, like Red Rescue or something, or the name escapes me, but I never played any of the Mystery Dungeon games. I downloaded the demo, and it was a meaty demo, and it got me hooked. Not that the genre itself was new, but that particular game was new, and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I could see myself buying this game and playing it more. So I think they can potentially hook new users. But at the same time, if a demo is too light, it could turn people off. Not saying like the Mario DK demo turned me off, because I was already interested in the game, but it just wasn't much to it. Like, I played it. I'm trying to think of the expression. You know, they say you can do something just enough to not like it. And I feel like with that demo, I needed a couple more levels to really hook me. You know, thankfully it was already on my radar, but for people who were curious, I don't know if that sold them on the game.
I think it was too short. Yeah, it does. Totally. It was very short. Surprisingly short, to be honest. I thought there'd be more to it. But yeah, like you, it was on my radar anyway, and I still am interested in it, so it's fine. And that's not the demo.
I'll say too, Gemma, I'm just thinking back on that demo. I know it's older news now because you talked about it a bit last week, but there was one of the levels where Mario had the minis and you had to guide them to get the letters.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was cool. I wanted to see more of that. And it was like the one, and then it booted you to like a trailer and prompted you to go to the eShop. And it's like, no, show me a little more. Like, you didn't show me enough to get me really invested in it. So,
Especially because there's over 100 levels. There's 130 or something levels in the game, the full game. So to have four, you know, that's a very small percentage. You'd think they could probably throw in double that amount. And
it's not even an appetizer. It's like a tasting menu.
Yeah, exactly. So, a little disappointing. I mean, it still looks good and plays well, but it's just, we want more. You know, the Pikmin demo actually comes to mind. That was a huge demo last year. Oh, the Pikmin 4 demo, sorry. Remember how that was several hours worth of gameplay?
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty meaty.
Yeah, that's a good example.
Yeah.
And it depends on the game. You know, if it's a big game, you can get away with that. Not every game maybe warrants a demo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some games are short, so they don't need one. But
for
a retail release, you know, a big release, a release that you can sink dozens of hours into, you can get away giving people a little more.
Yeah. I do wonder how they decide whether to make a demo or not. Like, what's that decision tree like? You know, I don't know. You know, with big games. Yeah, sorry.
I would say I think it's probably they have to stop and consider, is this going to actually help sell the game or push people away from it? Because, you know, with some of them, if it does start slow or maybe isn't what people would expect, then maybe it's not a great idea. I do know. Do you guys remember the game for the DS, Project X Zone? Did you ever play that?
I do remember that one. Yeah,
I'm aware of it.
It was a game that combined a whole bunch of different characters from many different games and put them in these weird, humorous battles. And I can't describe it and make it seem as interesting as it was, but that's one that I read about and thought, I have no interest in this. It just seemed like a fighting game, but there was much more to it than that. And there was a demo for it. And I downloaded the demo and was immediately hooked and ended up buying it and bought its sequel. So I think the best use of a demo is when people may not fully understand what the game is and you're allowing them to experience the core of it right away, get hooked, and then stop them after you've hooked them and say, now you got to go pay, because it certainly worked with Project X Zone.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I think that's exactly what Trav's saying. You're the target audience for that demo because you weren't interested and then it converted you. So yeah, exactly right.
That's a good point too about like mechanics, because like every now and then, and you guys probably do it too, you get a review game that is maybe hard to explain. Like you feel like you almost have to recap like the instruction manual, so to speak, to explain how it works, because there's a lot of things to it. And, you know, those are the sort of things it's easier to experience with the controller in hand than trying to read a review or, you know, a walkthrough. And that's where a demo can, you know, really make these abstract ideas become tangible and real, when people can play it and be like, wow, that's way more intuitive than it sounded.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, definitely agree with that. Yeah, I'm always surprised when I see a new demo, and I'm always tempted to try it just because why not? It's there, it's free. If it's a game I'm interested in, then, I mean, if it's a game I'm going to buy anyway, I suppose it is less, there's less incentive because I already know I want to buy it. But I did get the Pikmin 4 demo. I did get the Mario vs. Donkey Kong demo. But maybe that's also because I just wanted to try them as soon as possible ahead of time. Especially with something like Pikmin 4, that carried across, didn't it? Like what you did in the demo, did it carry across into the full game from memory? I can't remember now.
I don't
which one?
Oh, the Pikmin 4 demo.
I don't know if I played the demo for that because I knew I was getting the game. Maybe I didn't start. Yeah, I played the demo. Yeah. It carried over. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, and that makes it worthwhile. If you're going to play the game anyway and you're like, well, I can get a head start, you know. We all want things ASAP in this day and age, don't we? It's an instant gratification kind of situation. So, yeah.
I don't know how much they do it now, but I remember back in the day, back in the day, like during the 3DS, I mean, wasn't that long ago, but well, maybe it was 10 years ago. Anyway, sometimes they would have a demo and they would do like through Spot Pass or whatever, Nintendo would do some exclusive item or something that you could only get like through the demo, and then you could transfer it to the main game. That's a nice incentive.
Yeah, you know,
something
that's
like
true.
That. It's like, oh, I got to play the demo. Otherwise, I'm going to miss out on this trinket or, you know, this item. So I think those are compelling features. And I feel like I don't see a lot of that recently, but maybe I'm just not looking at the right demos.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I'll have to check out this list of demos on the eShop. I didn't know you could filter it that way. I'm going to have a look and see what's there. Yeah,
there's quite a few. You might be surprised.
Yeah. But like you, I am time poor as well. So I might just dedicate myself to the full game of something. But if there's something in there that I was like curious about, I'll have it, you know, I'll check it out and see what it's like, you know. Anyway, cool. Thank you. That was a good robust discussion on demos. I appreciate your input because I was just thinking about it during the week. So we'll move on to games that we're playing, which, since we kind of already have, and I won't go on about Sea of Stars too much more because I'm only a few hours into it, but I am so glad I picked it up. So, you know, thank you, Kirk, for convincing me, I think, over the last few weeks.
Well, and thank Justin for convincing me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why I didn't already, but I am glad I waited for the sale, I suppose. I did get, was it 20% off, I think? So that was nice. That was a nice incentive. But it is beautiful. It just, it so reminds me of those classic, like, Chrono Trigger type of games. It looks fantastic. And I really like the battle system. I think you might have mentioned this, Kirk, and I didn't, you know, kind of have too much to say about it, but I love what they've done to the battle system just to make it really accessible, easy. You can kind of choose how hard you want it to be. Like, there's certain elements you can do. What are they called? Relics, I think, or something you find along the way.
And yeah, artifacts?
Artifacts? Yeah, it could be artifacts. Yeah, and they can sort of make it harder, excuse me, or easier. You can actually kind of, yeah, almost choose your own adventure. There's one that lets you, I think it's after each battle, your health is refilled, and I think it's doubled as well. So that's a bit OP, but yeah.
What I settled into with the game was playing it without any of those, but then once I'm in a battle and things start to go south a little bit and I don't have a lot left, I hurry up and I turn that on.
Yeah.
So with my next fight, once it's done, everything just, you know, refills, and then I shut it back off.
Yeah, it's great. So, it's so handy.
Intermittently cheating.
Yes. And the way they've added this, and I've only just unlocked it after the kind of the trial that you finish with the Elder Mist, and he unlocks something where you can absorb, is it mana, I guess, and then you can have, you can enhance your attacks. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, very good game. Highly recommended. I'm going to keep going with that one. The other game that I've been playing this week, the review's already up, actually. It's a little golf sim called Golfinite, is how I'm saying it. Golfinite?
I wondered if it was Golfinity.
Well, that's what I thought. And I wanted to say that. I'm like, I don't think it's the best name. I think it should be called Golfinity. But it's Golfinite.
Golfinite.
But it looks like finite. Exactly. That's my point. I'm like, it looks like it's the finite version of golf, not the infinite version of golf. And I think Golfinity would have clarified that a lot. Like, you can't confuse Golfinity. That sounds like an infinite version of golf. That's my 2 cents.
I think I kept calling it Golf Night.
It does look like
maybe
that.
In the initial emails back and forth with the PR rep. I'm pretty sure I just typed Golf Night.
Yes. Oh, I think when I maybe messaged you about it, I think I even called it Golfinity or something. Or when I changed the name in our list, I'm pretty sure I put Golfinity and then I had to correct it. I'm like, no way, it's actually Golfinite. Yeah.
You should have looked up. Do they have a trailer? Sometimes the trailer they'll have like a narrator. Yeah, true. Check out Golfinite.
Yeah, I honestly think it's not the best name. And I didn't even mention that in the review because it seemed, I don't know, hard to explain. Yeah. But it's easy to say when you're talking about it on a podcast. The game itself is fine, though. It's cute and fun. It's kind of a pixelated approach, a bit of a classic kind of look and feel. It's a simple affair, but it's fun. I actually enjoyed my time with it. You know, the controls are generally good. You're just on a golf course hitting balls. That's the aim of the game, to get, as few shots as possible, or hits, whatever. I'm not a golfer, but, there's a par. You have to get it within, four or five hits. And if you get less than that, then you get negative numbers, and the lower the number, the better. The first time I played it, I didn't do well. And then the second time I played it, I did very well. I'd say it's a fairly easy kind of game. There's little traps on the course that you can turn on or off, like little obstacles. And I don't mean the usual traps like sand traps. They are there too. But there's these kind of warp holes and animals that kind of interfere with your ball. So you have to avoid them, which kind of mixes things up a little bit. And there's plenty of practice modes where you can sort of just practice your putting or your driving or I don't know any other clubs. There's wedges and things, but I've never really understood how golf works.
Use an open face club, a sandwich.
Yes. Thank you, Homer. yeah. Yeah. But I enjoyed it. It's decent. It's nothing crazy, but it's a fun little time if you're looking for something relaxing, I suppose. It's kind of relaxing. You can do 9 or 8 hole courses. I wish there was a little bit more, not necessarily customization, because that's there, but more like you don't really get to change your name or give yourself an avatar. It's just very player. You're just player. And then
need more personality.
A bit more personality. Yeah, that would help, I think. And there's no like leaderboards or online play, that kind of thing. So it's a very simple affair, but it works and it's cute. It just could be bigger and better, I suppose. But for what it is, it's fine. So yeah, check out my review on the Pure Nintendo website. The next game that I will be reviewing, which we talked about briefly last week from the trailer, which is Euphoria, the Saga 2. And I haven't started playing this yet, so I can't really give you too much information, except that it does come out on March the 1st. And I think, Trev, you weren't with us last week, and you, because Kirk and I did not know this series, which is on the NES originally, but do you have experience with it, or you're just aware of it, or how does that work? The original title.
I am aware of it. I don't have firsthand experience because while it was, slated to get a North American NES release for whatever reason, they axed it. I think it only got released in the UK. So it's one of those, like English releases that, it's not like a Famicom release that is in Japan because it's full of kanji text or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
An English game that I think, if I remember right, they I think I remember them thinking maybe it was too easy, which, mm-hmm. you know, that's the thing with NES games. So many of them were so hard. I don't think people know what easy actually was.
Yeah.
Like normal seemed easy because everything was so hard. But yeah. I do remember it. It got a virtual console release, I think, on the 3DS or not 3DS, the Wii U.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, I never did get to check it out, but it looks cute. It's sort of like a vibes of like, I don't know, like Mario 2, Blaster Master, mm-hmm. some of those classics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely has that vibe. And I remember reading, even just recently when I was researching it, that at the time it was considered to be easy, in quotation marks. NES easy? Is that a thing? Yeah. So I'm looking forward to playing Euphoria the Saga 2 and getting working on a review for that one. And did we have anything else we needed to mention, Kirk, based on our discussion last week?
Oh, yes, regarding that. I think the release date, we have the release date is March 1st, right? So that's mm-hmm. that's when it's coming out. However, the PR rep for the game mentioned to us that although it is very accessible, he says that a lot of the levels are also, or some of the levels are also very challenging. And that it's kind of like, if you want to get the final ending, you need to collect a very high number of these cog pieces. And that's for the skilled gamers, basically. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, as he puts here, the 120 stars in Super Mario 64. So if you're a completionist, this is going to be a pretty challenging game that should be a little bit more than what you expect, I think, just by looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's good. It's good to have that range, you know, for varied players and skill levels. Will it be NES hard? We'll let you know when we play it. Let's move on to Kirk, what you're playing this week, because I'm excited to hear how your impressions of Tomb Raider 1 to 3 Remastered.
Yes. We have a review code for this. It's funny because when I first started playing it, there are no improvements done to the opening cinematic cutscenes.
Oh, okay.
And so it was harsh to look yeah. at. In a way, it's like, oh, that's kind of funny. But then after a while, I'm like, my eyeballs aren't used to this anymore.
Yeah.
It looks like a bad PBS cartoon. But boy, once you get into the game, I mean, these are such good games, aren't they? The original three Tomb Raiders. My favorite is Tomb Raider 2, but 1 and 3 were great. And the controls, Trevor and I have had a conversation about this. It's funny because when I first started playing it, after about 5 minutes, I was pulling my hair out because Lara was so impossible to move. Anything, like if you were standing against a wall, just getting her to turn around and go the other direction was nuts. So I thought, I'm not going to be able to do this. This is insane. And I went into the controls and I completely blanked on the word here. You know, the screen
where
you
can take
your, the settings.
Thank yeah. you.
See, I'm so frustrated by these controls. I can't remember basic terminology anymore. But the settings screen also really haven't been redone at all. So they're a little weird. I mean, it's old computer controls as opposed to the way these things are done now with a controller and you know, what your brain is used to seeing when you're going through this stuff on the screen. Anyway, so I got to the controls and found out that I was using what they were calling the tank controls. And then there are modern controls. I switched to modern and suddenly playing this with a gamepad made a lot more sense. And Lara was much easier to control. It took me a bit, like, you know how on the computer when I was playing it, you would walk up to an edge and there was a button you could hit so you wouldn't step past it. You could just walk right up to it. It took me a while to find that on the controller, but I did. And then when she jumps, there's something you could do to reach out and grab a ledge, but if you hold it too long, you dive. And so numerous times I'm trying to grab ledges, missing, diving onto the ground and dying and starting over. Once I got over that hump, and that's all on me. I'm not complaining about the game here. That's on me. What a great set of games these are. It just harkens back to a time where Lara, the game, it was enough for her to just explore and to find things and to figure out how to get from point A to point B across these giant chasms. And yes, you're occasionally shooting wolves and bears and bats, but it wasn't a combat game. You weren't killing other people. There was just a charm, and it was all about the exploration instead of the violence. And again, I don't want to sound like a guy who's complaining about violence in video games. It's been there, you know, ever since we advanced beyond the Pong setup.
Yeah.
I mean, Missile Command, entire cities were getting whacked out, for crying out loud.
So yeah.
Not like this is anything new. But I think there was just much more personality in these games back then. And that really carries through. And I'm having a lot of fun. In fact, my favorite thing to do, though, is you can switch with just the hit of a button, the plus button on the gamepad. Switch between the new graphics, and I should say the remastered graphics in the game itself when you're actually playing are really good. I complained about the cutscenes, but it looks nice when you're actually playing. With the hit of a button, you can switch back to the original graphics. And aside from it being funny, like now when you're up against a wall of like ivy and they come out, you know, and Lara can stand there and they sort of hang over her. And then you switch to the old ones and it literally is just flat green on a rock. Because there was no actual 3D texture. It was just a different color to implement the leaves. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. But the
secret is that the new graphics, a lot of things are very dark. And so in numerous areas, I would switch over to the original graphics, which are much brighter. And that makes it a lot easier to find the hidden rooms that you need to find for the thing. So that's my suggestion to everyone playing it. Don't be afraid to switch back to the original graphics because everything is much easier to see as you're playing through. And it's still kind of fun in a charming way.
That's a good tip. Why is the second Tomb Raider your favorite? What made it so good?
Well, I think it was just a better game. I think they had gotten to the what worked in Tomb Raider 1, they were able to expand on a bit now. Probably they had more money going into it because the first one was successful. And I think 3, they started to push a little too far. So it started to get a little too convoluted, or like they were like, we got to add to it. We got to expand things. And it pushed beyond, I think, the scope of what I wanted in the game. There may be a lot of people out there prefer Tomb Raider 3. But for me, Tomb Raider 2 was the sweet spot in the original trilogy.
Cool. Yeah. Do you agree with that, Trev? I've never played them, so I don't really have an opinion.
Oh, yeah, I have played
the first one, but only briefly. Yeah.
Yeah. One was really good. I like 2 better. I feel like maybe Tomb Raider 2 had a little bit more action, like a little more gunplay, not that adventuring and exploring is still the focus, but I thought maybe it was a little more balanced than that. I feel like some of the set pieces in that game were more memorable too, like I think it was like the Venice canals or something, like,
oh yeah, where the boat race through the canals.
Yeah. When I think back on the games, I feel like I just remember having more fun. Like I have a vivid memory, me and a buddy, playing Tomb Raider 2 is not a 2-player game, but we were playing together. Cause it's like trying to pick out like, you know, areas that look like, oh, explore over there, or, you know, check over there, or, you know, swapping off between levels. So yeah, it's my favorite, but 1 was great. 3 for me, at least, was really hard. Like, I feel like, you know, Tomb Raider 1 and 2 were challenging and you die, but 3, like almost immediately, I think it opens like you're sliding down this like steep cliff or something. And it's like, you can die like in the opening seconds if you don't have good time. And it's almost like a runner, like that opening part, if I remember right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited to revisit these games. I had them all growing up. In fact, I probably still have them in a tote with my old PlayStation games. And they were big. The first 2 especially. I mean, they were early attempts at, you know, the first one came out around the same time as Mario 64.
It did. Yeah. Like,
and they really, you know, they got it right out of the gate. So, yeah, I'm excited to check these out. I was trying to see if there's a physical release, but it looks like it's at least initially just going to be digital. I wonder if like Limited Run Games will end up publishing it, because I think it's Asper that's doing the trilogy.
Yeah. Aspyr.
Aspyr. I've been saying it wrong. Yeah. I figure they're going to, I think Limited Runs did other games from them, published physical. So
okay.
But I don't think I want to wait. I think I want to just pick it up and
yeah,
revisit my younger days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. And speaking of younger days, Aspire, keep in mind, I was a Mac user. I'm still a Mac user, but there was a time when the Macintosh just had no games whatsoever. You would go to like EB Games, Electronic Boutiques, is that what it was? And there'd be like this tiny little area of Mac games amongst all these PC titles. And it was always stuff like chess, or the big joke amongst us was Mario Teaches Typing.
Yeah.
And so we never had anything, but one day you went in and sitting there from Aspire was Tomb Raider 2. And it blew our minds because we'd seen people playing this game. Like, they made this for the Mac. And so everybody bought it and it was a revelation. And it was, they blew open the doors on Mac gaming and suddenly everyone coming. And then we had Bungie releasing, like Halo was originally going to be a Mac only game, for crying out loud, until or maybe not only, but at least when it was originally released. Yeah, Bungie was a Mac company. So yeah, it was such a huge game for us. And to be able to play it again now on the Switch is fantastic.
That's awesome. I didn't know that. Yeah, that's cool. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it. I'm glad it's living up to your expectations of your memories, especially once that you figured out the controls. Yeah. So that's a good tip for anyone playing it.
Hey, Kirk. I almost hate to ask Kirk, but I'm sure listeners will want to know, is Laura's bosom, is it triangly?
Yeah. You know, okay, you set me up for this, but yeah, there was a point in the game where I was showing Tyranny, my wife, the difference between the two, and then we're like, okay, so yeah, it looks better, but now look at the difference in her breasts. Yes, they are as pointy as they were, and then you switch to the new graphics and they're curved, so it's kind of like a funny now I'm going to make it worse. It's a funny bounce back and forth between the. Although I'll say now there are no jiggle physics. No, they didn't add that. They just curved things out.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
Now that I've made everyone uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, you know, Trev asks the tough questions. That's what makes him a good journalist. So.
Yep. And I give the tough answers. I won't shy away from anything.
Yeah. Well, you heard it here first, folks. So thank you for that. Excellent. All right. Well, let's move on to another game that you're playing, which is, you can pronounce this one. What is
this? Shiren. I'm sorry, guys. I hate to interrupt.
I'm sorry. Yes.
But just to Kirk's point, flipping between, you know, the older visuals and the newer, I wonder if the updated visuals have upped the ESRB rating on this game. Because these were teen-rated games on the PlayStation, and I noticed on the Switch it has an M rating.
Oh, really?
And wow. I wonder if it's for lack of triangle, you know, chest.
It's not like we're seeing cleavage or anything. We've certainly seen. I can't imagine that's the case. Because
I saw that, and I at first I thought maybe it was a typo. I'm like, how are these M-rated games? They never were, but. Yeah, it has an M rating on the Switch for whatever reason.
Wow, it's actually MA in Australia. Like, you have to be 15 to play this game in Australia.
Yeah, well, that's crazy. It says blood, intense violence, and suggestive themes. It would say partial nudity or something, wouldn't it? If what do they call it when?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it says strong violence for Australia. Yeah.
They don't seem that violent to me. I was just talking about how they don't seem that violent, but of course,
yeah.
You know, maybe digging into three, maybe they do get a little more graphic in their depictions or something, but yeah, I don't know. It seems odd.
Yeah, I thought so too. And yeah, the ESRB is, yeah, they're just, it's interesting. I think there's a lack of maybe consistency in how they look at these games, especially when they're working with an existing game that had one rating. If they're going to change it in one direction or the other, they've got to be like some clear reasons why. And that's why I wondered if the updated visuals maybe make her look too ample or too sexy or something, where they feel like the themes are then too suggestive. I don't know.
Because I think the most offensive thing actually is the size of her waist. She's got this tiny, tiny, impossible waist that makes her look bigger,
you know, like a Barbie doll.
yeah, that is true.
Or a Malibu Stacy doll.
not look necessarily to proportions. Yeah.
Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. Yeah, it looks like there's a few gruesome death scenes, potentially, maybe.
You got to ask your contacts there at Aspire. Like, what's the deal with this? Can you find out more? I'd be curious.
I'll reach out to Michael and see what he has to say about the issue.
Yes, please. And update us on that next week. And the game comes out on the, I think it's the 14th in America or the US. Yeah, and
Valentine's Day.
Yeah. And I think it's the 15th in Australia. And it is 10% off, at least in Australia. I'm not sure about the US at the moment. So if you're looking to pre-order it.
Yep.
Yeah.
$27 in the US, normally 30.
That's a good deal, because these were full price games. You know, back in the day, you would have paid $150
$10 a game, and they come with a lot of content. You get all three games. You get the bonus content for all three games, and of course, you could start off and practice your moves in Lara's mansion. So quite a bit to do.
And can you choose? I assume you can just choose to jump straight into number two or three if you wanted to, as opposed to one. You don't have to unlock the others.
Yeah, you can start any one of them. You can go right to the bonus content if you want to not play through the original game.
So, that's cool.
You get to go into it however you want.
Can you still lock the butler in the freezer?
I haven't gone into Lara's mansion yet, so I can't say for sure.
I didn't know that was a thing. Okay. Yeah. That's intriguing. Yeah. See,
that would have made a fun demo, just letting you run around Laura's house. Because, you know, they have like the obstacle courses in there. Yeah. That would have been a good demo, I think.
Oh, you know, one thing that is in here, in fact, I was, when I was playing it in front of my family, I was doing something over and over again. There was a way you could climb onto a ledge above you and have Laura do a handstand. She didn't just climb up. She did like a handstand and then flipped over. And I was just over and over climbing up a ledge, trying to find the button combo that allowed me to do it. And then just like how I originally found it when I was playing Tomb Raider 2, one time I went to climb up and there it was. So I'm like, all right, it's in here. Now I know. I'm not going to say what it is. I want everyone to find it on their own. But yeah, just Lara showing off a little bit of fun little addition they had.
Nice. Very cool. Thank you. Can we move on now, Trev?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry about that. Okay. I just had to.
Okay. That was good. I'm glad we discussed that. Now we'll move on to Shirin the Wanderer, which is the mystery of Serpentcoil Island.
I think it's Serpentcoil. Serpentcoil Island.
I don't know why I said it like that.
Yeah, and I'll talk less about this so we can hurry up, move things along. But that doesn't mean that this isn't as an enjoyable of a game. I'm having a blast with this. And it's funny because there was a Shirin the Wanderer game that came out for the Wii, and I bought it based on looks alone, and I didn't like it, and I ended up trading it in. And that's one of the things I mentioned before that I love about reviewing these games is it forces me to kind of stick with it. At one point, I was so confused by the flow of this game that I actually did a search for "I don't understand the flow of Shirin the Wanderer" to see if anybody else could like tell me how to do it. It's hard because it starts out with you dying. You have to die. And that's what I didn't get. It's roguelike. So you're going into these dungeons. You're pushing really far. You die. You lose everything. You lose not just all the items that you're carrying, which I expected, but you lose your level. You go all the way back to point A every single time. Yeah. And it confused me. But then I realized the more I'm going in that you're furthering the story each time. So like I would go in and I would do certain things. I die. I go back. And after about the third time, suddenly they're giving me another element that wasn't there before. So even though I'm going back to the very beginning, more things are being made available to me to kind of to keep it going. You can't save in this game. I mean, you could save, but the moment you come back and restart, it's like a suspend point. Then that's gone. So even if like there was one time I loaded a suspend point, I went into a dungeon, was immediately surrounded by a whole bunch of monsters and thought, no, I don't want to do this. I'm going to see if I can go back to the suspend. So I quit the game. I started it up again. I was right there in front of all those monsters. So that's how harsh this game is with the, you got to do it until you die and then you go back to the start. But once you accept that and start to explore all these levels of these various areas, which are randomly generated. So every time you start, you're getting a whole different thing. It forces you to use the items you get as you go along. You're not saving them. You're not hoarding them. you're using them, you're figuring it out. You have to learn how to beat the monsters in order to keep going. And it ends up being really, really fun. Now, I think there are 31 levels you have to get through. The furthest I've gotten so far is 10. And the moment I got to the 10th, I was getting one shot killed by a monster in the dungeon. So I'm assuming eventually something is going to happen to allow me to get past that. So I'm playing, I'm getting little side story elements now. And eventually we'll get to the point I could get past that, push further, and we'll see how long that's able to sustain me. But I'm really surprised by how much fun I'm having with the game right now.
Well, that's good. It looks like it's out later this month on the 27th of February. But it's not a cheap game. It's like $60, this one.
No. And this is a series. It's, like I said, it's been around. I know there was a game release for the DS. There was one for the Wii. So I think it has its fan base. I am a bit surprised that it's that expensive. But I'm not going to say it's not worth it. It's a big game with a lot to do that forces you to play in ways you normally wouldn't.
Cool. Interesting. Yeah, it looks like there may even be another entry in the series on the Switch from a couple of years ago, 4 years ago or something, maybe?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I did look that up. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Oh, I'm glad you're enjoying it. I've not really heard of that series before, to be honest. Have you, Trev?
I've heard of it. I think I remember reading a Nintendo Power review of the... I think it was the DS one, but I've never played it myself.
Yeah, okay. No, me neither. Well, thank you, Kirk. Look forward to hearing your full thoughts in your review when it comes out before, I guess, the end of the month.
Yep. I'm just a couple days in, so I'll be able to expand on this quite a bit.
Nice. Very good. Trev, do we have time? Do you want to mention what you're playing this week?
Yeah, I can mention it quick. I am playing a couple of review games. Unfortunately, they're not really resonating with me, so I don't think they're terribly interesting to talk about. But thankfully, for fun, I am playing a game I picked up on sale, one of the Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster games.
Which one did you get?
I got the first one because, you know, an NES kid, you know, what can I say? That's the one I associate with. And, you know, the other ones, I either didn't play them because they were on, you know, Famicom originally, or Super Nintendo, which I didn't get into RPGs in the Super Nintendo till a little later with, you know, Mario RPG, Chrono Trigger. But I was curious to check out the first one. And it's cool. It has a lot of nice just quality of life updates to make the game more modern. You know, the original Final Fantasy, I mean, it's almost 40 years old now. It was groundbreaking, but it was kind of buggy. You know, it's a little clunky, and this game just speeds it up. You know, it values you, respects your time more. I've almost beaten it. I'm at the end boss. The spike in difficulty is kind of jarring. I think while the game's pretty easy, especially if you tweak, you know, some of the settings, I think they made the end boss a lot harder. He's got a lot more hit points than I remember. So, but it's good. It's fun. And I like that you can switch between the NES music and some remastered tracks. Cool. Yeah, that's a lot of, that's a touch I really appreciate. So it still plays like an old RPG, but you know, you no longer have to buy potions one at a time. You know, I can buy 99 all at once if I want. And you know, you can toggle a map to so you don't have to wander around as much. You can turn off the random battles, you know, once you feel like you've leveled up to an appropriate part. So a lot of just quality features to, you know, make your time feel like you're not just grinding for the sake of grinding.
Do you think Final Fantasy, you know, started off as a top-down style like Zelda did and then moved into the more 3D realm? Zelda still has, it still alternates back and forth a little bit, whereas Final Fantasy just seems to just stick to the 3D now. Do you find that? Like they have their little spin-offs.
I don't know if I'm the one to ask because I actually haven't played a lot of the mainstream Final Fantasy games. I'm the type to gravitate more towards the spin-offs, like the Crystal Chronicle games, like on GameCube or DS, or there was another game on DS, Chocobo Tales. It was like a mini game type thing. I like that, but I feel like maybe they have gone back a little bit. I seem to remember on like WiiWare, they had a digital Final Fantasy game like the early years that was that old school style. So, yeah, I don't know. You'd probably be better asking somebody who's played more of those games.
No, that's cool. I was tempted by this myself. You can get the full bundle of all six of them, or you can pick them up individually, which is good. So you just picked up the first one.
I did, because that's the one I had the memories. I never played the others, so. But I mean, I'm aware of them, and you know, some of them have been subsequently re-released, like on, you know, I think the Game Boy Advance had a compilation cart, but
yeah,
there's definitely a lot of gameplay there. I mean, it's probably a good value for the money. I think this is the first time they've been on sale, which is why I grabbed it.
20% off until the 15th, so that's pretty good, actually. How much is it? Because I can only see the total price for all of them. How much was just one by itself?
Gosh, I'm trying to remember. It was in double digits. I'll say that. It was.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It depends. I got it up here. They're all on sale. But like Final Fantasy II is $12 normally. Three is $18 normally.
Oh, okay.
Five is $18. Yeah, it looks like most of them are $18, but maybe one and two are a little less.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and that makes sense, because one would be the, you know, the most simple. So,
and the full package looks like it's usually 75, but it's currently 60 because it's 20% off. So, yeah, I guess if you're looking to get all of them, it's a good deal. But yeah, if you just want a couple, like you said, that's a lot of gameplay. Six full RPG games. You know, not 100 hours each or anything, but still. Plenty of time to sink into these.
Yeah, you're not going to blitz through them unless you abuse, like there's a setting you can do like four times experience, four times gold. If you do that, then clearly you're gonna run through the game. But if you play it either as intended or if you up it just a little bit, like I had no problem upping the experience and the gold after a while, because the first game is you know, it's antiquated in a lot of ways. It was designed around a grind.
Yeah. But,
you know, and there's features you can choose to use or ignore or turn off. So it's not like you're locked in. Oh, I have to play it in easy mode now. I did this, or, you know, a lot of times I never used the map. You know, I hardly ever dashed. I mean, there's, you know, it's nice. I like the options. I'm always a fan of options.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Thank you for that recap of Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster. And if listeners are playing, let us know which one of those is your favorite. I'm tempted to pick up one. I don't know. I'll have a look. I'll see how I go. Well, let's close off with our Switch 2 Rumors of the Week. And this week, I just wanted to mention, I guess, a rumor, which isn't even a Nintendo rumor necessarily. It's about Sony developing their own handheld console to compete with the Switch 2. And I'm just like, what? Is Nintendo ahead of the curve again, and now the others are kind of trying to follow suit? Or do you think this is a realistic thing that Sony would try to do? You know, the other thing is, am I right in saying that there's some sort of PlayStation Portable that streams from your PlayStation console, just like the gamepad did for the Wii U? Have you heard about that? I can't remember what the name of it is. But I was reading about
one that's available now.
Yeah, I think so. Not the one that I was originally talking about is not. It's something they're developing to compete with the Switch 2, like an actual portable console that's rumored to be, you know, super powerful and blah blah blah, whatever. But I also read that there's some kind of streaming. It's kind of like a adapter or an additional thing you can buy for your PlayStation. I guess it's PlayStation 5, I don't really know, that lets you stream. So that it's basically, the concept is, if someone's using the TV and you still want to play your PlayStation, you can stream to this handheld device. And I'm like, that's what the Wii U was, right? That's that's what that was. You could just switch to TV mode or gamepad mode.
I think I remember them having something like that about like 10 years ago. There was I remember a commercial where someone was playing a Madden game and then had to go somewhere, and so like picked up the device and went with it and kept playing the game.
Was it the PS Go?
Maybe. I don't remember what it was. I just remember that commercial.
Yeah, there seemed to be a newer one, but maybe they've done it before. It just felt like, oh, Nintendo actually was, were they actually right with the Wii U? I don't know.
Yeah. As for a competing system, a system that would compete for the Switch 2 that has the intensive graphics of like a PS4 or PS5, I don't see how they could do it. I think we mentioned, look at the size of their consoles.
Yeah, yeah.
How are they going to get that to the size of a portable device that you could take with you and offer the same experience?
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Yeah, I don't know either, honestly. It seems, I don't know, if people are wanting that from, you know, Sony fans maybe are wanting that. I'm not sure. They did say in the room that I read that it was still a couple of years off, like it was still at least 2 years away from being released. It's not like it's going to come out, you know, now and compete with the Switch now or the Switch 2, even if the Switch 2 comes out this year or next year. It'll be a post-Switch 2 thing.
I think it'll be a good thing because, you know, if you guys remember, or if listeners are old enough to remember, when the DS first launched, the PSP was beating it, and it sort of forced Nintendo to really step it up in terms of high quality, you know, software, and eventually, you know, the DS dominated that generation, but the PSP still sold, like, I think it was in the high 70 millions, you know, which is a lot. It's half of what the, you know, less than half of what the DS sold, but you know, that's not a small number. So I think if it forces, you know, healthy competition kind of forces, you know, people to be innovative and focus on quality and deals and stuff. So I think it would be good, you know, to ensure that Nintendo doesn't repeat some of the mistakes that it had with like the Wii U or the early days of the 3DS, you know, before they righted the ship. So,
yeah. Okay. Cool. Interesting. So yeah, don't know if that's going to lead anywhere, but we'll see. The other, what is this? The rumors of an unveiling at GDC. Is that your comment, Trev?
I saw that a few places. Like the they have the Game Developers Conference, and they're like, "Oh, could they show off the Switch 2 there?" This is
GDC started that rumor.
I wonder if, because historically speaking, that would just be such an outlier. Like, when is Nintendo unveiled hardware at something like that? You know, if the rumor was, a Nintendo Direct or E3, assuming we still had E3, that'd be one thing. But I feel like people now are just, you know, kind of throwing any rumor out there to see what sticks.
Yeah, and that's not even a big event, right, for like people to tune in. I mean, some companies are going to do things there, but it wasn't like, say, an E3 was, or even Gamescom, where it's more like fans tuning in. That's it's developers conference. It's for developers, right? Why would they do it there?
I don't know. The thing is, I could see them, like, if it was, okay, this may not be the best example. Like, say, like, remember when they upgraded the Wiimote to the Wii Motion Plus? You know, an accessory like that, I could see them showing off something like that at a GDC, but brand new hardware, it's like, no, you guys are grasping at straws, or maybe it's you're taking wishful thinking and trying to will it into existence and reality, but no.
Or maybe they're just trying to, you know, market the GDC, you know, hey,
it, you know, Kirk could be right. Maybe they did start that.
Exactly. When is GDC? When is that?
Is it March?
I don't know, it's fairly soon. Is it an annual thing?
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up. GDC 2024 is...
It's March 18th through the 22nd in San Francisco.
Yeah.
The fiscal year isn't even up. Like, doesn't it run from March to March? Like, why would they? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's true. But I think people are just thinking, you know, what's the next event? What's the next possible event? I mean, there's a Direct probably this month, but, you know, what's next after that? Well, GDC, maybe they'll announce it there. But yeah, I think it's wishful thinking, like you said. So interesting.
They're not going to announce it before, like, Princess Peach Showtime comes out.
Yeah, true.
It's coming out around the same time. It's like, oh, we're going to hurt our sales of a new game by having people save up for the next system.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mm. Yeah, no, that doesn't make sense. So, but that means you don't think they would announce it in a February Direct then either, right?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know. I don't see them announcing this till, I think even the president said they would have more to say, like maybe around May. That would be the earliest I would see any type of, you know, flat out confirmation. Like, obviously we know they're working on it, but I don't think we'd get any more details before then at the earliest. And but of course, you know, I'm different. I don't even think it's going to release this year. So, you know, I recognize that I'm not the, I'm going against the vocal majority.
But that doesn't mean you're wrong. And I'm, like I said earlier, I'm starting to see the point of that. It'll be interesting to see who is the ultimate correct person in the end. But yes. But yeah, I think, I mean, we've gone kind of over time. So thank you so much. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we kind of close things off for the week? Either Kirk or Trip?
Did you ever find out how many Nintendo systems have been announced and released?
Well, I believe it's none. Is it none?
For home consoles, the answer is none. It's never been done. I think for handhelds, maybe the DS might have been one, but even the majority of handhelds, they have not been announced and released the same year. So for Switch 2 or Switch Pro to do that, it would be bucking tradition in a big way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. So that's why I'm also leaning a little more towards your way of thinking. I don't know. Justin convinced me. It was solid arguments that he had. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. And then now you've come along and you also make sense. So
I should have argued it more at the time, but.
Yes.
You pick and choose sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah.
You were afraid for your job. We get it.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, it's all rumors and speculation until Nintendo themselves announce something, but it's fun to talk about. And yeah, can't wait to find out for real. But yeah, it's a good time. It's a good time to be a fan. And until then, we have plenty of games to play that's keeping us very busy. So yes, well, thank you very much, both of you, for joining me this week. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the show. We'd love to know your thoughts. Let us know. Leave us a comment on YouTube or DM us. We're on Twitter. And we're also on Mastodon and Blue Sky. So follow us on any of those channels. And what else? We've got a magazine that we're working on right now. So if you'd like to support us, please head on over to patreon.com/purenintendo. We're wrapping up our current issue, which we can't wait to get into your hands. So stay tuned. And until next week, thank you and game on, everybody. Bye.
See ya.